I'm David Suchet, and this is Blood Ties.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wonsall, and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wonsall.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, as ever, for listening and for taking the journey with us.
Journey's going on a long time. It's years. The journey's years long now.
It is. I think that's rather wonderful. I'm fantastically impressed with it all. And what's more, we seem to be getting more and more listeners, which is even more.
We're so thrilled.
We are.
I can't tell you how important it is to us to get more listeners. So if everyone listening could just tell one other friend they haven't already told about us, we would be really grateful.
We certainly would. It makes such a difference to know that the audience is expanding.
Yeah.
And again, there's so much of interest out there. One of the things that's been preoccupying me in the last few weeks is the fascination with the perpetrators rather than the victims. And we've talked about this, but in a true crime podcast, it's important to remember that someone suffers dreadfully and the families suffer dreadfully.
Yeah, we're going to try and make more of that this year.
Yes, we certainly are. And I think
one of our listeners wrote us a nice email about that, didn't she?
Yes.
About how, I think it was a she, about how we always know the names of the murderers and never the victim.
That's right.
The wrong way round.
It is the wrong way round. What have I been doing this
week? Dad, are you wearing braces?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my word. I just looked over at Jeffrey's outfit and underneath his waistcoat, he's wearing braces. I've never seen you wear braces before.
Well, I decided I need some.
Did you?
Yes.
Is that a new purchase, the 2020 fashion?
Yeah. Yeah.
Très chic. Can
I
try and get a photograph if possible?
I have been watching what seems to me the interminable White House farm.
You continue to watch
I've continued to watch
episodes. You're braver than most. I haven't even started.
Goodness.
We did White House Farm Murders last week in honour of the TV show, which is now on, but we're not sure the TV show is that good. So if you don't know the story, I would just listen to the podcast and not bother watching the television.
Yes, unfortunately.
And for those of you listening who don't live in the UK,
yes,
the TV, then it doesn't matter. But the drama is a six-part drama on ITV, which is one of our normal terrestrial
channels
here.
Yeah. So I did watch some more of that. I watched Joker, which got 11 Oscar nominations.
He's so good in it.
He's very, very good.
He's so good in it, isn't he?
Joaquin Phoenix is just wonderful.
I love him.
It's a superb performance. Not altogether sure about the film.
Yeah, the film is like, for a Batman-y, nothing actually happens.
Yeah. Well, what happens is it sets up Batman, doesn't it?
Yeah. The character study is great.
Yeah. Yes. And De Niro's performance is excellent.
Yeah. The film's, it's very watchable, but yeah, it's not like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what have you been doing this week?
Just working jolly hard.
You always work hard, Mo.
It's harder than normal. Betsy had to have her teeth cleaned and some of her teeth came out.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
I was a bit sad.
Oh, poor old.
But she seems fine.
She seems very good this morning. Absolutely.
Yeah. So she had to have a general anaesthetic and everything. So that's all a bit stressful.
That's all too.
But I like my vet very much. Betsy's vet very much. So it's fine.
Well, that's nice.
So all fine. Anyway, okay. So. This week we are doing our podcast is going to be based on the Netflix documentary Don't F with Cats. We don't need to be cursing on this program.
We don't.
But we're not going to call it that. We're going to call it
The Narcissist.
The Narcissist, the killing of
Yuen Lin. Yes.
Because we thought it was interesting that it was a big deal on Netflix, and hopefully all of you can access that. But we'll put a note in the podcast notes so you can find it.
We're very interested that we have more than half our audiences in the United States, which is extraordinary.
This is actually a Canadian killer.
But this actually is a Canadian story.
We do have some Canadian listeners. Big up the Canadian listeners.
Yep.
Hello.
Hello. The man finally known as Luca Rocco Magnotta was actually born Eric Clinton Kirk Newman in July 1982 in Scarborough in Ontario in Canada. He was the son of Anna and Donald Newman and was the first of their three children. According to him, his mother was obsessed with cleanliness and routinely locked the children out of the house. And she once put their pet rabbits out in the cold to freeze to death. It was clearly quite a strange house, at least that's the allegation. His father was diagnosed with schizophrenia when Eric Newman was 12, and he then divorced Anna and leading her and her son to move in with his grandmother Phyllis. Basically, he was a fairly calm student at school. He wasn't particularly dramatic, but what he was had appeared very quickly to be obsessed with his own looks. He was 5'11", quite pasty faced, quite a good body, and in 2003, at the age of 21, he began working as a stripper, an escort, and appeared in porn videos.
He had he has a nice bone structure.
Yes, yes,
I would say.
You'd be right. Forgive
Jeffrey's
me.
Not feeling well.
I have a cold. Please forgive me. In 2005, at the age of 23, he was convicted of impersonating a woman and three counts of fraud after applying for a credit card and spending $10,000 on it. He got a 9-month conditional sentence and 12 months probation. The following year, in August 2006, he decided to change his name to Luca Rocco Magnotta and was declared bankrupt the following year. He had a very checkered credit history. At some points, particularly when he was working as an escort, he made a lot of money, but in cash. But he had the ability to spend it equally quickly.
Tax-free.
Yeah. But the narcissism, and that's why this is so important, led him to set up at least 70 Facebook pages and 20 websites under different names.
And there was like thousands of pictures of himself.
Thousands.
In various...
All sorts of poses.
Yeah.
Many of them overtly sexual, it should be said. Now, the fact that he's interested in, you know, he was a sex worker, the fact that he was very preoccupied by how he looked, has, I suppose, something to do with what the crime he was then to commit. But as the Netflix documentary shows, he initiates his, I suppose the only thing you can truly call it is his evil behaviour, by killing kittens on
and
video.
Posting the videos on YouTube.
On YouTube. He was very... I think it would be fair to say, troubled. That effect on displaying him killing kittens on YouTube led there to the creation of almost a vigilante group. Looking to find out who this man was.
To track him down online. And these people were all over...
All over the world. Absolutely. He had a very... He really did think that he was sort of rather important. He appears as a pin-up model in Toronto's Fab magazine under the pseudonym of Jimmy in 2005. And in 2007, He was an unsuccessful competitor in a reality television show, Cover Guy. He also had multiple cosmetic surgeries.
Yeah.
And auditioned for a network television show called Plastic Makes Perfect in February 2008, all of which adds up to the same level of narcissism. Mm. This extraordinary self-obsession. All that's fine. But he... I'm not saying that someone who is kills kittens on YouTube is necessarily bound to turn into a killer, but it's certainly indicative in this particular case.
Mm. Well, it led to felt so much more to do with getting attention than it did necessarily the act of killing.
I think
it didn't seem like, obviously Jeff will explain further what he did, but it seemed like the pleasure came from the notoriety, not from the bloodlust, which is often not the case. Like, often it's the sort of satisfaction from the killing which leads people to kill more.
Yes.
Rather than the... Although the fame thing is always associated, often associated with it.
One doesn't necessarily lead to the other.
No.
That's what we're both trying to say the same thing. It is just, this is a very extraordinary man who thinks it's perfectly reasonable to kill animals and place videos of that on YouTube. I mean, we've talked many times, Mo, haven't we, about how cruelty to animals is one of the signposts in the early lives of serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many times does that come up. But what tipped a man now known as Luca Magnotta over from torturing and killing animals, particularly cats, to killing a human being is mystery. I genuinely do not have an explanation. Something went on, something very, very dramatic went on. It's not until, in fact, well, perhaps I should just add a little background. One of the things that Magnotta was fascinated by was the film Basic Instinct.
Yeah, he really loved movies, didn't he?
He loved movies, but he particularly loved Basic Instinct, which you may remember starred Michael Douglas as the cop and Sharon Stone as the killer,
mm-hmm.
whose name you may recall, and I think it's important to remember this as this story expands. The name of Sharon Stone's character was Catherine Tramell. In May 2012, Yun Lin, also known as Justin Lin, was a student at Concordia University in Canada. He came from Wuhan in China, and he also worked part-time at a convenience store in the Pointe Saint-Charles. Lin had been studying in Montreal since 2011, and he moved into the Griffithstown apartment with a roommate on the 1st of May 2012. He was last seen on May the 24th, 2012, and his friends reported getting a text message from him at 9 p.m. that night. His boss became suspicious when he didn't show up for his shift at the convenience store the following day. Three of his friends went into his apartment on May the 27th, and he was reported missing to the police on May the 29th. Now comes the ugly part, and I'll do this as gently as I possibly can. On May the 25th, 2012, an 11-minute video entitled One Lunatic, One Ice Pick, and you will again remember that Basic Instinct ends with a shot of an ice pick under the bed. The said video was uploaded to bestgore.com. There is no, I'm afraid, sanitized way of describing what the video showed. But effectively, it shows a naked man tied to a bed frame, being repeatedly stabbed with what looks like an ice pick and a kitchen knife, and then dismembered. And then the perpetrator commits necrophilia with the dead body. In the background, the 1987 New Order song True Faith was played. There was a longer version, what the Canadian authorities later described as a more extensive version, which appeared, or at least suggested, there may have been some cannibalism.
God, I did not catch that part in the documentary.
Apparently, knife and fork.
I watched the documentary, but I have not done any extra research around this, unlike you.
Not surprisingly, there were a great many complaints about this video being uploaded. A lot of people attempted to get it taken down. Eventually, it was. And indeed, the police later confirmed that the video was authentic and identified the victim as Yun Lin. On May the 29th, just 5 days later, a package containing a severed left foot was delivered to the Conservative Party headquarters in Canada.
That's such a bold move.
And a left hand, again severed, was put in the post to the Liberal Party headquarters. It was intercepted and didn't actually get there. On May the 27th, a torso was discovered in a suitcase in a garbage pile in an alley behind an apartment block in the Stoughton area of Montreal. Well, all that proves that this particular killer was not at all forensically aware, because it was perfectly clear that it had been dumped there by somebody who lived really in the block nearby.
Yeah.
You know, this was not a man dispensing.
It's strange, isn't it? Because in order to upload 3 videos of cats being killed in various ways, and then to upload a video of a human being killed, and in all that time, which spanned over like 2 years or 18 months, I think,
yeah,
to not get caught. So you have to have some kind of like internet smart or tech savvy, which I don't have.
He must have
IP things and
he must have had
stuff like that. But just no brain sense about, as you say, forensic knowledge.
The police recovered human remains, bloody clothes, and papers identifying the suspect in apartment 208, and one of which Magnotta had been staying. Also, signally, and very importantly, it does show in the documentary, but inside one of the cupboards, written in red, there was blood on the mattress, the bathtub, the fridge, the table. And this message: if you don't like the reflection, don't look in the mirror. I don't care. You are talking about a man who is a serious narcissist.
Mm.
On May the 30th, 2012, it was confirmed by the police that the body parts they discovered, including the foot and the hand, and they discovered in the alley, the torso, mm-hmm, the alley, belonged to Yun Lin. Then a right foot and a right hand were delivered to 2 schools in Vancouver, also belonging to Yun Lin. And on July the 1st, his head was discovered on a small lake in Montreal after an anonymous tip. By that point, It was perfectly obvious that the person of interest to the police in their inquiries was none other than Luca Rocco Magnotta. He had effectively run for it. On May the 31st, literally 7 days after the killing, the police issued a red Interpol alert for Magnotta to be arrested. He has gone to Paris using his own passport. He's been to Paris in 2010. He obviously has a friend in Paris. He's variously described as a big man. By that I mean, obviously large. Mm. Could well have been a lover, we don't know. It's very unclear. He goes to stay in the Bagnoles area, Paris, which is actually very near the bus station. The police trace him to
Paris,
but he leaves just before they get there. He gets on a bus.
The Canadian police tip off the tell the French police they need to go find him.
That's right.
Yeah.
The police miss him, and he's by now on a bus to Berlin, where he's also been before. Well, as I say, this Magnotta's appetite for narcissism really doesn't know any bounds at all, because he's finally, incidentally, he goes to Paris on his own passport, then goes to Berlin, and then checks into the hotel as Kirk Trammell.
Oh.
Another reference back
to
Basic Instinct. He was finally arrested by the German police. They're now tracking him across Europe.
And also they've, like, put his picture out everywhere.
Yes.
Right.
And June the 4th, he's found in an internet cafe checking on stories about himself.
Googling himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
pretty good.
It's it's almost kind of a parody, almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's wanted for first-degree murder, committing an indignity to a dead body, publishing obscene material, mailing obscene, indecent, immoral or scurrilous material, and criminally harassing the Canadian Prime Minister of the time, Stephen Harper, and several other unnamed members of Parliament. You have to say he must have taken leave of his senses, or at least it would appear.
I don't know, but in his head, I guess he was just like, this is the way that's going to get me the most notoriety. But then when he'd got that, did he think about what he would do then?
I don't think he did. I mean, when he was first arrested in Berlin, he tried giving all sorts of false names. Because he had a whole set of false names. I mean, I'm just looking back at some of them. There was, Vladimir Romanov, Mattia Del Santo, Jimmy, Justin, Angel, and Kirk Trammell.
Yeah.
But eventually, of course, he gave absolutely no way he could deny, especially when he tried, after giving the fake names, his identity was confirmed through his fingerprints.
Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't Ted Bundy here.
Not the sharpest tool in the toolbox.
No. And in fact, he was regarded as so dangerous. He didn't fight extradition back to Canada, but he was regarded by the Canadian authorities as far too dangerous to put on a commercial flight.
Oh, I thought they said that no one wanted to put him on the flight. Like, no commercial airline would fly him. So they had to call the...
Whatever happened.
They had to get the
Canadian Air Force.
Air Force to fly him back.
Had to fly him back.
Yeah, I know. That's pretty... The thing is that on the documentary, which obviously we would recommend that you watch, they interview his mother.
Yes.
Right. And bearing in mind, like, how many lies he's told and how many versions of himself he's presented or whatever, they interview his mother, and at the end she's like, and she steadfastly is like, you're looking for the wrong person. There's this man called Manny who is basically my son's pimp who controls everything he does. He's the one who's made him do all of this.
The so-called third hand.
Right. I genuinely, and I've talked to a few other people about this, at that point was like, oh yeah, no, it wasn't him. He's so easily swayed or driven that he would do that under someone else's But then obviously that's revealed to be like yet another false name taken from a movie.
Yes.
And it's just complete nonsense.
But I've seen several people, the documentary shows his mother, Anna.
Mm.
And several people describe online her as being totally delusional.
But she's like, because when in the documentary it first cut to her, I thought, this is extraordinary. Like, you would never, ever normally see a murderer's family interviewed ever. I've never seen that before, I don't think.
Very rare.
But she just steadfastly believes it's not true.
No, the so-called Manny Lopez theory.
Mm.
It's nothing to do with my son. It's all to do with this mysterious man who's... At one point in the kittens videos, there is another hand.
Yeah.
There is a third hand.
Yeah, and it is questionable who that is, but I suppose it could be. It sounded as... Oh, I know he played a French documentary or a Russian sitcom over the first video, didn't he? Rather than it sounding like there was
yes.
more than one person.
In June 2012, he appeared in court by a video link to plead not guilty to all the charges through his lawyer. And on 21st of June, he appeared in person at a high-security Montreal courtroom to request a trial by jury. A preliminary hearing began the following March 2013. His defence team requested that the media be barred, but this was declined, and Yun Lin's father had travelled from China to attend the hearing.
Where is he in prison? He was in prison for life, wasn't he?
Yeah. Finally, Magnotta appears, elects to be tried by a judge and jury, pleads not guilty, although admitting to the acts of which he was accused, but claiming diminished responsibility due to mental disorder. The trial lasted 12 weeks. Endless experts.
There's such a lot of information as well.
Endless experts. Yes, he was mad. Antisocial behaviour. Was it, you know, his father was diagnosed as a schizophrenic? Was he a paranoid schizophrenic? I mean, literally. I mean, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6...
Expert witnesses.
Expert witnesses. One independent, 2 for the Crown, 3 for the defence. Borderline personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, histrionic personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, paranoid schizophrenia, The jury finally went out and debated for 8 days whether or not Magnotta was capable of understanding what he was doing. In other words, was he sane? And they finally decided that he was, sane. And as a number of the police witnesses suggested, and the prosecution argued, he liked to pretend to be schizophrenic. Again, perhaps to draw attention to himself.
Mm.
He used a lot of drugs as a young man, and there has been some speculation that he was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic as a teenager. Was it a family trait? Did he inherit some kind of paranoid schizophrenia from his father? We don't know. All we do know is that the jury found him guilty of all 5 charges. There was all kinds of speculation that he was... Yeah, other crimes, the Hollywood Hills, Hollywood Sign murder. But in fact, there's absolutely no evidence at all. All we do know is that he butchered, and that's the only word for it, Yun Lin. There were several serial homicides in Toronto between 2010 and 2017. Again, no connection to Magnotta.
No, it just seems... It is so interesting because it just seems to be just so much about attention from watching the story unfold in the documentary, what I could see was somebody who was not really acknowledged at school, struggled to get attention, wasn't bad looking, tried to get a career as a model and as an actor. It didn't work. And he just wanted to find a way to become notorious. Seemed to me to be so obsessed with having that, one, having the fame and also the one-upmanship over the group of people who were trying to catch him, I thought were really interesting and not dissimilar to the Golden State Killer, the Michelle McNamara and her group that were searching for him .
I think the only word that really works is narcissist.
Yeah, completely narcissistic. And you can see on the CCTV footage of when they sort of film him coming, or he's been filmed coming in and out of the building after he committed the murder. He's constantly stopping to look in the mirror to check how he looks all the time.
Yeah. In America, in North America, there were constant comparisons with a convicted murderer called Mark Twitchell, who was the inspiration for the series Dexter.
Oh, yeah. Dexter's a serial killer that kills bad people.
That's right.
I've not watched it, but it's very popular.
There are 10 books.
It's from books.
Oh, yes. Oh. Very, very good books, too.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes. The author, I've recently reviewed one of his, the new...
Dexter, or a different one.
No, Dexter's author. Dexter also uses social media.
Oh, right.
There's the connection.
Yeah.
But Magnotta, there is nothing. I find him creepy, to be perfectly honest.
He's really creepy. His mind just works in a completely... But I think it's interesting because, Jeffrey was saying before we came on air, he did, although it's awful, he thankfully only killed one person and not many more. Yes. I'm sure he would have gone on to do had he not been caught. But luckily, I don't think he was smart enough to... I mean, he was outfoxed because, the vigilante group that found him notified the police and they were all obviously very frustrated because it could have been avoided, which is the saddest thing.
Yes.
Because, his behaviour had... They had found him and his behaviours,
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting because I think there are some traits within there, though this is very magnified, that are interesting to explore in relation to the psychology of serial killers.
Yes.
And those concepts of power, narcissism, on all of these similar traits which appear again and again.
Indeed. And I think one of the things that comes out of these podcasts is that there is a kind of fairly steady line between the various criminals, and they have a very particular mindset. But in a way, perhaps Magnotta is just simply heightened. Yes, that narcissistic trait, which is there in a lot of serial killers, it just displays it in technicolor. It is just extraordinary. But it is a fascinating case, and I think that documentaries are very good.
Yeah, well worth watching if you haven't seen them.
Do have a look at them. There are 3 episodes. But he just seems to me creepy.
He's very creepy.
Yeah. That odd, truly odd in every way. But that's the story of the narcissist.
Yeah.
And the killing of Yuen Lin.
Thanks, Dad.
Let's talk about something cheerful for a minute. There's something about Magnotta that really gets to me.
Yeah. Have you watched anything else apart from the Joker to take your mind off
the
misery?
I don't get a chance. There's always too much death out there.
Death on death.
Yeah.
I started watching the new series of Sex Education.
Oh, yeah, I haven't looked at the first series yet.
I don't know if it's entirely up your street, but it's a good show.
It's supposed to be very honest. That's what...
Honest, is that how people describe it?
That's what
I was thinking about it. I was thinking if there were shows like that around when I had first started agenting, a lot of my clients who took 10 years to start working would have worked sooner potentially because of that chance for young people to get really good career breaks.
Yeah. But it wasn't there.
No. But now there's more content, so it's good.
Well, that's good.
Good thing.
Yeah, I mean, the trouble is, by the time I've finished preparing the voiceovers for Murder by the Sea, preparing the podcast, watching White House Farm and Joker, where's the time for the good bits?
I know, it's true.
Perhaps
this weekend you should try and watch something jolly. Just to lighten the mood.
Yeah. The trial of Stephen Ward. I mean, of Christine Keeler.
Dad. Well, yeah, and that's fine. But no, something like, you know.
Something more lighthearted.
It's a good thing that you occasionally are made to watch Call the Midwife or whatever it is you sometimes have to watch.
Yes, I do. I often have to watch Call the Midwife.
Or something, Eat Grantchester or something equally light.
Yeah. I'll endeavour, because the other thing I do, of course, is review crime and thrillers. So yeah. When I'm not watching, I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And of course, people send me all sorts of notes about, oh, this is a true life crime. You know, oh dear.
Yeah. Outside of anyone commenting on the podcast, please do email us
with suggestions.
Yes, please do email us email us anyway, just to let us know what you think, or go on our Instagram or our Twitter. bloodties.podcast@gmail.com is our email address, and bloodties_pod, which is where you'll find us on Instagram and on Twitter. Alongside of writing to tell us people you'd like to cover, etc., please do feel free to send a jolly note to Jeffrey or a joke or something to cheer him up.
Yes, I'd be very grateful. You can find me through my website.
And thank you, Dad, and thank you, as usual, to all of the people who help us out, our producer Poppy Damon, my brother Dan, who wrote the music, my friend Barney, who helps with the sound, my friend Hannah, who helps us with all things podcast related, and Audio Boom for hosting us.
Thank you all, and most of all, thank you for listening. But as I always say, bad things happen to good people, so do be careful out there.